welcome to this edition of the Kids Ministry Collective podcast, where we talk about topics and resources that help you lead more to reach more. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this edition of the Kids Ministry Collective podcast. Welcome to another episode of the Kids Ministry Collective podcast. I'm your host, Tom Bump, and I'm joined by my co-host and Lego reseller extraordinaire, Ron Brooks. How's it going, Ron?
It's not too bad. Got a little bit extra time to sort some Legos, and I've moved a few sets this week, so that's always a good day.
Good for you. Good. It's a good week, then. It's a good week. That's one of the benefits, I guess, of COVID-19. You got a little extra time to do that. So, hey, make the most of it. Make the most of it. So anyway, hey, we also want to say thanks to for taking time to listen to our podcast, and special thanks to Go Curriculum. We really appreciate their sponsorship of this episode. And if you haven't checked out Go, you really should. They're making some of the most innovative things this summer available, especially a curriculum called Bolt, which is a brand new home-based, super easy, super gospel-filled and fun vacation Bible school that can be done in a backyard, in a park, in a home, at a church, doesn't matter. It's a fantastic kit. I got to have my hands on it, and it is great. So take a look in the show notes, but we appreciate Go Curriculum for their sponsorship of our episode of the KMC. So thanks for that as well. Now, in this edition, in this episode, you know, one of the things, Ron, you and I, we've talked a lot about this kind of topic. Every leader is going to realize sooner or later that adversity is going to come. We're all going to have those seasons. You've had them. I've had them. And when they come, and even in the season like we are right now, where there's a lot of adversity for all of us, we're naturally going to start asking questions, especially the why question. And our guest today is Gerald Fadiomi, and we met him at Orange Conference. We got to hear him speak, and man, he just blessed our socks off there. And so found out that he just wrote a book that's going to be launching. In fact, when this episode airs on June 15th, it's launch day, and it's called When Life Gives You Lemons. So welcome to the KMC podcast, Gerald.
Come on. It's so good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Hey, man, tell us a little bit about yourself and your family, because you multiplied fast. you went from 2 to 4 like that, man.
Very quickly.
So yes, tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so I'm in Atlanta. My name is Gerald Fadiomi. I'm married to the best human on the planet. Her name's Kylie. And we just had identical twin baby girls about 8 weeks ago. So when this podcast airs, I guess it'll be 3 months. It'll be 3 months old at that point, which is pretty cool. So yeah, our house is crazy right now. I have not slept in months, but I'm alive because Red Bull, you know, gives new wings. So we're here.
That's right. We were laughing off air that we should have bought stock in Pampers and Red Bull. Ron and I could be sitting pretty right now, just off the Fadiomi family. That'd be awesome. Man. We're going to get it right one of these days, Ron. I swear we're going to catch it. We're going to get that trend. But anyway, hey, it's good to have you on. And I know our listeners are going to be blessed by this conversation. Usually on the KMC, we start off our podcast. We try to ask a lot of why questions when we go through this conversation, but usually always we start with one. And yeah. So I want to know, what's your why behind writing a book like When Life Gives You Lemons? Why'd you write a book like this?
Yeah, I'll be honest, I'm not an expert on much in life, but if there is one thing that I know, it's adversity, because I've just dealt with a lot of it. So a little bit of backstory on me. My parents were never married. My dad and I's relationship ended in the third grade. My mom is a diagnosed schizophrenic. She went to jail my junior year of high school. I became a club promoter when I graduated high school, and through parties for a living, I had 3 friends who were murdered and 1 friend commit suicide all in 1 year. Wow. I became a Christian, started working in ministry, got married. In the first year of marriage, my wife's dad took his own life, which was extremely difficult for us. And have bailed my mom out of jail multiple occasions since then. And most recently, due to coronavirus, I missed the birth of my identical twin girls. I'd come back from a work trip and was not feeling super great. So I went down to the hospital. They said 48 hours before I got my results. And in those 48 hours, my kids were born. So it's been a trying season for sure. But in the middle of all that, I remember this moment. I was sitting out on my back porch. We had just recently bought this house. And so I was sitting back there and I was just crying out to God. I was by myself. My wife was in the hospital. And I'd actually been writing another book for a couple of months. And I just decided recently before all of this that I wasn't going to write that book anymore. It just didn't feel right. It felt like I was forcing something there. And so I stopped writing that and I'm sitting on my back porch. And as I'm crying out to God, the Lord reminded me of a sermon that I'd written a couple of years ago on the life of Joseph. And it just started speaking to my soul in a different way. And so I started to write some things down. And before I knew it, I was on this journey of writing this book, When Life Gives You Lemons. Part of the reason I wrote this book, the why behind the book that you're asking right now, is ironic that that's the first question, because why is the reason I'm asking this book? It is the wrong question to ask in seasons of adversity. There are times where why is the right question to ask, but in this case, in adversity, it's very rarely the right question to ask. And so what I wanted to do was come alongside all of us with three better questions from the life of Joseph to ask in seasons of adversity when things get really hard.
That's some story you've got there. I told you before we went on air, we were following along the birth of your daughters. My wife came across some of the articles posted in the news, so we were right there with you. I can't imagine going through something like that. I've got one daughter myself, and thankfully I didn't have to deal with anything like that. But as a parent, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So the book, when you came up with the idea of it, what was running through your head? What were you learning at the time? You had one book in mind. You changed your idea because of what you're going through. Talk to us about that.
Yeah. Without giving away every one of the questions in the book, I'll give you the first one that I was quickly understanding in the season. There was a lot that was not in my control in this, and I was aware of that. What I didn't spend a lot of time thinking about were the things that were in my control. And I think one of the exercises and principles that we share in the first chapter of the book that I'm learning and kind of navigating through in my own life right now is this practice of releasing the things that aren't in my control to God, but focusing on doing the things that are in my control to the best of my ability. And for a lot of years as a Christian, I've thought, well, God has this in control, so I'm just going to trust him with all of it. And you can. But there's also parts of it that are our responsibility to do the best that we can right now. And if we look at the life of Joseph, we see like adversity comes his way. A lot of things happen in his life that are beyond his control. But in every season, he does the things that are in his control. It's funny, Paul actually talks about this idea of releasing your concerns and doing what's in your control in Philippians 4, 6, and 7, right? Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and petition, present your request to the Lord. And when we do that, what do we get back? The peace of Christ, right? And so the recipe for peace is releasing our concerns and doing what's in our control, and it leads to a life of more peace. And so that's one of the things that we've just been practicing in our house right now. In seasons that are very, very difficult, we try to slow down and go, hey, what's in my control? What can I focus on? What can I do? The goal of the book, honestly, is twofold, right? One is to help people slow down and not be so responsive to adversity, and to actually take the time to ask the right questions. Because if we ask the right questions, adversity can actually be a really great thing for us. And that kind of leads to the second goal of the book. It's to redefine the definition of good, right? You think about what Paul wrote in Romans, that God works all things together for the good of those who love him and who have been called according to his purpose. Well, for a lot of us, we define good by our purpose, not God's purpose. Right. Mm-hmm. So for me, when things don't go the way that I want, when my plans aren't happening, when my purposes aren't being accomplished, then it's easy in those moments to question the goodness of God. Well, the scriptures don't say that he works according to our purpose. It says that he works according to his purpose. Well, what is God's purpose for you and for me? It's very simple: to be conformed into the image of his son and to lead other people to know Jesus, to make disciples. Right. So when we see things like that, our perspective and our definition of good has to change. Because good then is not things going our way. Good is actually anything that causes us to become more like Jesus and anything that allows us to share the gospel, right? Mm-hmm. And so that perspective shift, I think, allows us to do what James says in James 1, to consider it pure joy when we face trials of many kinds. So I'm sorry, that's a super long answer. I'm so excited about this content in this book. But yeah, those are some of the things that I've been learning these days.
Yeah. I'm going to jump ahead a couple of questions because it kind of jumps off of what you're just talking about, the things that are in our control versus the things that are out of our control. I know for me personally, I'm not a control freak, but I'm comfortable when I know what's going to happen, mm-hmm. you know, whether I can control it or not, as long as I know what's going to happen, I'm okay. But as soon as I don't know what's going to happen and then I can't control anything that's going on, that's when my worry and anxiety kick in. So talk to us a little bit about how you see the difference in what we control and what we don't control.
Yeah, I think any time that we have full control, there's no space for trust, right? And so part of the reason that I think God doesn't give us complete control over anything is because when we have complete control, there's no possible way for us to trust him and rely on him and to be dependent on him, right? John 15:5 becomes completely irrelevant if we have complete control, right? Like, there's no purpose for us to stay connected to Jesus. But Jesus would say, no, I'm the vine, you're the branch. If you don't stay connected to me, you won't bear any fruit. There's no good coming out of your life if you're not connected to me. But we have complete control, there's no reason for connection. And so I think part of the reality of our life is that we have to be okay with the lack of control because it forces us to dependency on the Father, and that ultimately grows our faith and it grows our character and it makes us more like Jesus. That doesn't take away the pain of not knowing, that doesn't take away the uncertainty, but it does allow us to sit in it and look at it through a different lens and different perspective.
And so, you know, as you think about those kind of things, you asked three questions as you started getting into when you're facing adversity. Mm-hmm. And you talked about, I loved this, acknowledging the sour, seeing the potential and asking the right questions. Can you unpack those for us just a little bit?
Yeah. So I went to counseling, for the first time, maybe 6 years ago. And I went into counseling with this perspective. I'm fine. I've gotten over my past. I really don't need help dealing with any of that stuff. What I need is to figure out how I can grow in a deeper intimacy with Jesus. And I sat down with my counselor. I'm going to plug her because she's amazing. Her name's Joy Seidner. Her website is Joyful Counselor. If you're in Atlanta, you should see Joy. She's the best. But I sat down with her on the first day. She said this to me. She said, Gerald, you will not be able to go a step further in your faith with Jesus because when you think of your heavenly Father, you relate him to your earthly father. And your earthly father was absent and he only cared to a point. And so you think God only cares to a point in your life, but the rest of it's on you, right? And so essentially what she was saying to me is, hey, you can't just move forward. We got to go backwards and uncover, unroot, and deal with some things. And as we began to do that, what I found her say over and over and over again in these counseling sessions is, hey, you know that the way that you responded to that is normal. You know that part of the reason your story is the way that it is because some of the things that have happened to you. And she started to, for me, for the first time in my entire life, go, hey, it's okay to acknowledge the fact that what you went through was really hard. And it's okay to acknowledge the fact that it's had an effect on who you are and some of the ways that you make decisions. Like, it's okay to acknowledge the fact that the season of adversity that you've been in or the season of adversity that you're in right now is sucky. And you're going through it and you have the right to grieve it and you need to grieve it, right? It's okay to not be okay, but it's not okay to stay that way, right? Mm-hmm. And so the next thing is to see the potential. And so acknowledge the sour, acknowledge the fact that it's hard, but now let's look forward to a preferred future and go, what could my life be on the other side of this? Who could I become? How could I grow from this? What are some things that I can learn? What are some things that I can implement? What are some things that I can do differently in light of the current circumstances that I'm in? Let's see the preferred future and then let's start moving in that direction, right? Like, let's start working towards those things. And the way that we work towards them is we ask the right questions. We ask the right questions in light of our adversity that will lead us to the action steps that will lead to the preferred future that we're seeing ahead. So those are those three ideas from the first chapter.
Hang on, Ron, I want to ask, yeah. I just had a, so as he was saying that, because I think one of the things that I want to help listeners pay attention to is something that started when you said that about going into the counseling thing, because I still think, unfortunately, we have a stigma mm-hmm. in ministry that we can't admit that we're not okay.
Yep.
You know, and that's why when somebody says, how you doing? Your first response is, I'm good. I'm fine.
Yep.
Living the dream. You know, we have all of our cliche pat answers that we immediately respond to. You know, I often talk about, you know, on Sunday morning, the biggest group of liars are in the church because we all greet each other and say the same things, even though inside we're feeling like death warned over and we've been hit with a Mack truck and all those kind of things. And and we're not being honest. And in the ministry leader world, especially, we're scared to say those things.
Yeah.
We're scared to acknowledge that things are sour in our life.
Yeah.
We're having a hard time seeing any kind of potential. And maybe we don't even know what questions we're even supposed to ask at that point. Can you tell me, and can you say some words of encouragement to some of those leaders that are struggling with that? They know they need help, but they're scared to ask. Can you say a word to them of how you would encourage them to go? Because I think that's something that's so needed. I'm an advocate for that stuff. I've been pushing people. It's part of why I've started my own ministry of helping leaders with this kind of stuff, because I was in that same boat. So I can relate to what you're doing, but I'd love to have another voice speak into that.
Yeah, so I'm going to give you a practical answer and then a spiritual answer, because I've been wrestling with some things spiritually that I want to talk about as well. Practically speaking, I could not see my preferred future without the help of somebody else, right? I had spent the first 24 years of my life surviving because of all of the adversity that I faced, and I never knew or learned how to dream or how to see a future beyond what I experienced. All I was trying to do was survive. Without professional help, I could not see a future. There was nothing wrong with me. And I think y'all gotta understand that, right? Like, there's a stigma on counseling that makes you feel like if I have to go to counseling, then there's something wrong with me. Okay, I'm gonna take that back. There was something wrong with me. There's something wrong with everyone.
yes.
Right? Like, we're all broken. And if we're Christians, like, that's one of the things that qualifies us for relationship with God is our brokenness. It's a prerequisite. We can't be saved if we don't know that we're broken. And so to acknowledge our brokenness in one aspect, but then to deny it in the sense that we can find people who can help us doesn't really make a lot of sense. And so I think we have to get over the stigma, get over the judgment, and go, if I want to be the healthiest version of me, I have to allow other people into the process. And that could be professionally, that could be a group of friends that you just speak candidly about what you're wrestling with. That could be an accountability partner, whatever that looks like. So practical. Spiritually, I've been wrestling with this idea. And so please do not kill me theologically. I don't know where I'm landing with this yet. This is just like a thought process that I've been wrestling with and thinking through. What's interesting to me is that Jesus showed back up in his resurrected body with the scars from the cross.
Mm-hmm.
He could have come back perfectly fine, completely healed, no scars, no evidence. He chose to come back with his scars. I don't know why. I don't know exactly what that means. But I think for us as Christians, for some reason, we try very hard to hide our scars when Jesus showed up and showed his. And he showed his as evidence of who he was and of what he was capable of. And sometimes I just wonder if the scars that we're hiding are actually keeping people who don't know Jesus from understanding that our stories are only evidence of the goodness of God. And the thing that you might be hiding may be the very thing that could give someone freedom, because they see another Christian who's broken and who's messed up and who's been through some things, and they've seen Jesus heal the wounds and have made them now scars. So again, don't kill me theologically. I'm wrestling through that still. But I think there's something to be said for us being more open with the things that have hurt us and how we've wrestled with them in the past.
I can relate a lot. I mean, different circumstances, but the counseling that I went through helped me to identify some things that happened, some experiences that I went through that affected me in ways that I didn't realize.
Yeah.
So by going through those sessions and identifying those things, that helps me now deal with my thought process, because I know where that's coming from. When you're talking about the purpose in the pain, mm-hmm. I can kind of make that connection. I went through some things before so that I can help somebody potentially, like you're saying, going through something similar. Can you help us to understand that? Because going through something, people that are listening right now are going through something and they're not going to see the purpose in their pain. Speak to them right now, let them know, give them a little bit of hope that God can turn this around and that there is good that can come out of it.
Yeah, so I think a couple of thoughts there. One, I have to go back to our definition of good, right? There's not good that can come out of it. The situation is good. It's just hard, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's good because in our suffering, we become more like Jesus. And if the end result is becoming more like Jesus, then it's good. It may be a hard situation. It may have been an unfair situation. It may have been a painful situation. The cross did not feel good, But I think we could all agree that it was good for us, right? Like, we wouldn't be having this conversation had it not been for the pain of the cross. And so I don't want to make light of anyone's adversity. I don't want to make light of anyone's situation or what you've walked through in the past, or what you may be currently walking through. But I do want to challenge all of us to maybe shift our perspective and go, okay, if God really does work all things together for our good, then maybe I have to start looking at my adversity, my pain, and my suffering from a different perspective, and allow us to let hope enter into that narrative because of that. I do want to be just very honest about this. A lot of what we're talking about leads down a mental health road, and I'm not a professional in this space, right? I'm not an expert in mental health, and so I want to be careful to say, like, I understand that there are varying levels of this, and we're at a top, I don't want to say surface, but we're towards the surface in this conversation. There are some deep wounds and some deep hurts and some deep adversity that people have walked through. And yes, one podcast isn't going to solve that. And me giving you some encouraging words isn't going to fix it. It is a long road towards recovery. But there is recovery, right? Like, it's possible. God can redeem it. What's interesting is in this project, so I wrote the book, When Life Gives You Lemons, it's all about adversity. When I finished the book, I kept coming back to this thought that adversity is the cause for anxiety for a lot of people, right? Yeah. And so because you've gone through something hard, you're now not only anxious about what you've gone through, but you're anxious about what could happen in the future. And so as I wrestled with that, I actually talked to a friend of mine. Her name's Hannah Hall. She's a licensed professional counselor. She's up in Athens, Georgia, and she sees adults and college students and young adults up there. And so I asked her, I said, hey, would you come alongside me? Could we put together a 15 to 20 video course to help people with some practical tools for battling their anxiety and give them some, like, clinically researched practices that can help them overcome their adversity as well? And so that'll come out with the book. One of the things that she's doing in it that I'm so excited about is our culture has made anxiety like a hot button word. Everyone says anxiety often. There are differences between having feelings of anxiety and having clinical anxiety. Yes. And sometimes it's hard to figure out where the line is. And so Hannah's actually going to help us with an exercise that helps us identify, okay, is this, am I at a place where I need to seek professional guidance? Or are there just some practices I need to put in place when I have feelings of anxiety? And so I just wanted to put that disclaimer out. I'm good. Not a medical professional in this. I do think there's some practical things that we can do, but there are some places where we need more help than we can offer.
Yeah. Well, I think that's really powerful to say it that way. And you're right. There are times where we've got to reach that point of saying, okay, yeah, I do need some professional help. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And it's time for churches to support leadership and support ministry leaders in that journey. If they need to walk that, they need to have that freedom and that support. And that I said it to a friend that was going through it. That is not a sign of weakness. That is a sign of insane strength for you to say, hey, you know what? I'm not in that place where I need to be, and I need someone to walk this through. And I think that's pretty powerful. And I hope that if somebody's listening to this and you are struggling, that you would reach out to someone and know that you're being strong. You're not being weak. You're being strong. Absolutely. And that, yes, the pain you're feeling is significant. But again, I've said it many times, God doesn't waste our pain. Yeah. And he does have that purpose. So I'm glad you put that in there, because I think that's an important thing. I also love this quote when it's kind of stopped me for a moment. I was like, wow, that's really, really good. You said, I don't want to just go through it. I want to grow from it.
Yeah.
I'd love to know what, because you said this was kind of a real aha revelation moment. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So it was about 3 o'clock in the morning. And my twins, they like to do this thing at night where one of them stops crying and then they wait for 10 minutes and the next one starts, so that you never get any sleep. And so I was holding my daughter Zoe, and they had some really bad acid reflux when they were first born. We actually had to get a different formula for them to help with it. But in that first week, she was just like thrashing her head all over the place. She was trying to find the bottle, but she couldn't really find it. She's crying. She's screaming. She's literally grabbing me with her hands and just clawing at me. She's pulling chest hairs out at this point. And she is just frantic. And I'm looking at her holding the bottle in my hand going, baby girl, I have what you need in my hands. Like, I got you. I know exactly what you need. It's in my hands. All I need you to do is just calm down for a minute to trust me and to let me take care of you, right? And as I was having this thought at 3 o'clock in the morning, I felt like the Lord spoke to me, this is you. That when adversity comes your way, you act like she does.
Mm.
You hit your head against the wall, you're thrashing, you're looking everywhere to try to find a solution. And if you would just slow down and breathe and trust me, I have everything that you need in my hands, right? And so I had this moment where I went, okay, gosh, I need to reevaluate the way that I look at God. It also made me think of a conversation that I had with my wife, because that day before I said to her, I just wish they were toddlers already so that they could communicate at least what they need, right?
Yeah.
Just in a world that doesn't exist, let's just imagine that my child was born at 2 years old. That moment would have never happened. And that revelation that I had from God, I would have never experienced. And my perspective of him would not have been able to change if I would have just gotten through the crying phase, if I would have just gotten through the formula phase, if I would have just gotten through like that season, I would have missed an opportunity to grow in my intimacy and my understanding of God, right? And so I think for a lot of us, what we tend to do is we get to a hard season and we go, I just want to get through this. I just want it to be done. I don't want to deal with this. Like, let's just go, 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 go. As soon as we can get this over with, the better. And I don't want to be that person. I want to be the person that goes, it's hard, it sucks. And yeah, I wish that I didn't have to go through this. But if there's a way that I can grow in the middle of it, I don't want to miss that. I don't want to miss that opportunity. And I hate to keep going back to the same thought, but this is the anchor for the book.
Mm-hmm.
In adversity, we grow from our suffering and we become more like Jesus. And at the end of my life, I want to be closer to Jesus than I was when I started, right? And so I don't want to go through hard things. If I could avoid them under any circumstance, I would. But the reality is we will. And so if they're going to happen one way or another, why not make the choice to grow from them instead of just trying to get through it?
Yeah. I find that we, especially Americans, we don't like suffering. And oftentimes we want to fix the suffering that either we're going through or somebody else is going through. And we miss just what you said, that there's a purpose in that.
Yeah.
And you know, if we really believe, like Romans 8:28, if we really believe that to be truth,
yeah,
that all things do work together for good, why do we always try to bail out on the suffering part of it and say, oh, I'll just take the working out for good part and let's skip the suffering? We don't like that suffering. So what can a leader do to make the most of these adverse times?
Yeah. So one, to your thought about us not liking the suffering, I sometimes wonder what would happen if Jesus in the garden, when he said, if it's possible to let this cup pass, if God had just been like, all right, cool. And he was like, all right, cool, I'm not going to go to the cross, right? Like, it's so funny. We want to follow Jesus, but we don't want to follow the example of Jesus.
Right.
And Jesus suffered, but yet we don't want to suffer. I have a hard time with it. And again, I'm not saying that at anyone. I'm saying that to myself as well, right? Like,
oh yeah,
how can I expect to be like Jesus if I don't want to follow the example of Jesus in every way? We don't like suffering. We also don't like obedience. Our American Christianity has taken those two words out of our Christianity.
But it's funny
if you look at Jesus, suffering and obedience are part of the story, right? So that's a side note. How does a leader deal with these adverse times? Gosh, I feel like I'm going to give you all the whole book in this podcast.
Well, yes. I almost should have prefaced that by saying without giving too much away, because God, you're going to want to get his book. Trust me.
Yeah. I'm just going to give you one practical exercise. This is
there
from
we go.
This first chapter. In a season of adversity, I'm going to go back to the what's in my control. One of the practical ways to do this is to take a sheet of paper out. And this is not complex. Write down everything that's concerning you. So let's be super practical. Your ministry leader, you asked for a budget increase for your ministry, right? You had a lot of good reasons why you should have gotten it. Your senior pastor decided, I'm going to give it to another ministry. You are frustrated, right? And you're like, I don't understand how you have expectations for us to grow, but you will not resource us. And you're in a season of adversity in your job right now because of finances, right? What's in my control is the first question in the book. Okay, how does that practically apply? You take out a sheet of paper, you write out all of the things that are concerning you, frustrating you, making you anxious, annoying you, all of the above. You write all of that on a sheet of paper. Take another colored pen, red is preferred, and circle the things that you wrote down that are actually in your control. Okay? The things that are in your control, you go do those to the best of your ability. You can't control the budget. It's not your, you can't control that. You have no power over that. You can control how many volunteers you recruit. You can control if you ask people to donate. You can control your attitude in the situation. You can control how you partner with other ministries so that you can work with each other's budget, right? Like, there are a lot of things that we can control, but when we get focused on the things that are in our concern or focused on the things that are frustrating us, we miss the opportunity to do all of that. So practically, as a ministry leader, if you're in an adverse situation, write down all the things that are concerning you and frustrating about it. Circle the things that are in your control. Go do those to the best of your ability. And then the element of trust has to come in. If we really say we trust Jesus, then we have to trust him with everything. So in that season, go, all right, God, everything that I couldn't circle, I'm going to trust you with it. I'm going to trust that you will shift my pastor's heart to see the need for the resources in this ministry. I'm going to trust that you are working in him in the same way that you're working in me. I'm going to trust that you have plans for my ministry that maybe I can't see. And if I had the things that I asked for, maybe I would not be able to do some of the other things that I should be doing, right? Like, So there's an element of trust that has to be there. Do what's in your control, release your concerns. You will find more peace in that situation, but I also think you'll be more productive.
Wow. That's a great activity there. I may spend some time myself writing down some things when we're done here. So somebody picks up your book, reads cover to cover. What are you hoping that they walk away with?
Yeah, my hope. So here's the thing about everything in the book. This is not a one-time fix. It's going to take practice and years to get this right. I wrote the book and I still don't get any of this right, right? Like, I'm still learning how to do all of this. But my hope is that we would make a decision to ask these three questions anytime adversity comes, knowing that we're gonna get it wrong. But the unfortunate and fortunate thing is adversity is not a one-time thing either. So you're gonna get other chances to get it right, right? And so my hope is that we would all slow down and ask these three questions anytime something happens that's hard or adverse. And then the second hope is what I said earlier, that we would redefine our definition of good. And we would start to see even the hardest. I mean, this is not my idea, y'all. Like, this is the brother of Jesus. He says it, consider it pure joy when you face trials of any kind, because the testing of your faith leads to perseverance and perseverance leads to mature and complete faith where you lack nothing. So I want us to be able to do that, to consider it joy, to see the good in even the hardest situations. So slow down and ask the right questions, and change our definition of good so that we can grow in our faith and our intimacy with Jesus.
Wow. Some great stuff. Great stuff. So Gerald, obviously this book's coming out today as this podcast airs, June 15th, 2020. How can somebody get a hold of this book? Where do they got to go? How do they get it?
Yeah, so it's available on Amazon. You can go to Amazon and order it right now. Some of the other resources I talked about, Hannah and I have actually put together three free resources that are around some of the practices that'll be in the course. So if you go to thelemonbook.com, there'll be a link to purchase the book there. It'll take you to Amazon. There'll be a link to the free resources that you can go and download and put some of those things into practice. And then there'll also be a link to the course that you can purchase as well.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. And Ron will make sure all that's in the show notes.
Yep, I've got that all written down.
So he keeps the links from getting all messed up and jumbled because I can't read my handwriting after this podcast recording. So he'll get all that. Gerald, if somebody wants to reach out and touch base with you, or they've got some questions, how would they be able to touch base with you?
Yeah, so on all social media platforms, it's at Gerald Fatiomi. My website is GeraldFatiomi.com. I'm super creative, y'all. I just use my name for everything. So there you go. Hey,
the problem is
no one knows how to spell it. So go to the show notes, because that's going to be the only way that you get it right. at Gerald Fatiomi everywhere.
There we go. Yes, we will make sure, and Ron will make sure it's spelled correctly in the show.
Will do. Yep.
Hey, brother, thank you so much for sharing your heart for sharing your story with us. I hope that people will go grab this book and dig into it, share it with other people, because it's not just for ministry leaders. This is for anybody that is walking life's journey, whether they're believers or not. I think this is a great book to hand to somebody and say, hey, I know, you know, you're struggling here. Check this one out. This has got some hope-filled ideas in it for you. I think it'll be that great resource for it. And having those bonus resources, that's pretty wonderful. So thanks for sharing all that.
Yeah, thank you all for letting me be a part of this. It's awesome.
Yeah, well, hey, thanks again for listening to another edition of the Kids Ministry Collective podcast. Again, thanks to Go Curriculum for their sponsorship. We really appreciate them. Go check out Go Curriculum and Bolt VBS. We'd love to have you do that as well. And again, if you haven't subscribed to the Kid Ministry Collective podcast, we hope that you'll do that. If you're not part of our Facebook group, just search out the Kids Ministry Collective, and we would love to have you join in our community where we continue to grow and iron sharpen iron daily on a daily basis, or we're encouraging each other. So, Ron, this has been fun, man. Good conversation.
Yep, it was. Thanks again, Gerald. Appreciate it.
No.
Yep. So thanks again, and join us again for the next edition of the KMC.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Kids Ministry Collective podcast. We hope that it's helped and encouraged you. If you would, support our podcast by continuing to share it with other leaders. And if you haven't already, hey, please subscribe and leave us a review wherever you listen to this podcast. We look forward to hearing from you how this podcast has helped and sharpened your skills in ministries. So let us know on your Facebook page, or head over to kmccoach.net and share with us there. And thanks again for listening to the Kid Ministry Collective podcast.